Patterson. I'm the sister of Jason McPherson, who died in Notting Hill Police Station in 2007. I want to say a couple of things today. I want to warn all of you that haven't had your inquests yet. I want to warn you not to go the same way I went, yeah? Do not expect you will get anything out of your inquest, because you won't. If they learn and if they listen when we tell them, my brother wouldn't have died in Notting Hill Police Station, yeah? The only way they will learn is if they listen. And the only way they'll listen is if they hear us, right? So what do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
No!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
No!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
No!
This is the story of a man losing his sight, but not his vision. Even so, the first images are still of death. For decade after decade, my eyes could only follow the families of the dead. The camera captures images of grief, of anger, pain, of struggle, of hope, of love. From time to time, I look across. A flash of light breaks through. Now what is this? It's worrying, these apparitions. The fabric of my sight disintegrates. I catch a glimpse, a bluish light, a burning red, a blinding white. Is this a memory, or do I see what happens after life? What is this sight? Why make another film about death, they will ask me. Nobody asked Cezanne why he kept painting landscapes. Cezanne was an artist who looked beyond the image. He questioned how the eyes functioned, and he was right. Neuroscientists now understand that our eyes scan an image twice, but the brain corrupts that image with what it thinks should be there. Cezanne wanted us to really look. He knew how to use light. Francis Bacon understood this too. He painted chaos again and again. He saw a beauty in blood. His obsession was the force of death. He said, "We are always trying to defeat death by leaving images, but it won't make any difference. We will just be dead, and an image may live on." In film school, students are taught how to read a film, but they should be taught how to read people. A story is valued if it shows imagination. But look at these faces. Imagine their lives. What drove them to take part in this demonstration, while others chose to stay at home? They cry out the names of the dead. Each face, any face, holds a story. This face, this woman.
As a person, Jason was just friendly, loving. As my little brother, he was always there for me. Whenever I needed him, I could just call him and he'd be there in a flash kind of thing. No matter what I wanted and what I needed of him, he was always there for me. He was my mum's main carer as well. Took so much time looking after my mum, always on the phone. If I didn't phone him, he'd have the major aunt with me. He just wanted to know that me and the kids were all right all the time.
Jason had been in trouble with the law and had a number of convictions, including possession with intent to supply Class A drugs. He'd served time in prison and was known to the police.
I'm never going to say that Jason didn't have a criminal record. He did his little times in prison kind of thing, and he was getting away from all that, and he'd met his girlfriend and he wanted to start afresh, and he'd said to me, "Sam, I'm finished with it," kind of thing. "I can't be doing it anymore."
I was at home with Jason's girlfriend, Leah, and we were doing some cakes. So I said to Leah, "Call Jason up and ask him to buy us some custard. Anyway, I called him and I said to him, could he bring home some custard? So he said, yeah, and he was on his way home.
She was phoning him, finding out where he was. And he kept saying, I'm coming home, I'm coming, kind of thing. And he was with two of his friends. And they stopped off in the Edward Woods estate in West London. And he went up to see one of his friends, and his other two friends waited downstairs in the car for him. When he came back down to the car, they were surrounded by police officers, running to the car with batons, threatening them to smash the windows in if they didn't get out of the car. They all got out of the car, and they were all searched right there on the spot.
So eventually, we were sitting there, and I said to her, no, I said, something's happened. I said, you know, if Jason says he's coming, he's going to come. Anyway, I called it again. Then I heard like a whole heap of noise on the background, and I heard shouting. Then I heard a voice saying, I can't breathe, stop, stop, I can't breathe. And I really thought it was Jason and his friends messing about, because that's the type of person he was. And all of a sudden, I heard something like, he's dying. So I started shouting and saying, stop messing about, you know, and I started shouting down the phone. And then the voices sounded like they were coming nearer and nearer, and it was like, so I started to scream, and I said, I called Leah downstairs. I said, Leah, listen to this, listen to this. So anyway, she listened, and then all of a sudden the phone went dead.
I only found out what happened to Jason the morning after. My mum called me around 6 o'clock in the morning, and I thought something had happened to her. I thought she was going to tell me that she was still in hospital. And then she said, no, it's Jason. I thought, oh no, he's been arrested or something. It never came to my head. And she said, Sam, they've killed him. I said, who's killed him, Mum? I said, what are you talking about? I thought, I couldn't understand what she was saying. She said, no, he got arrested, Sam, and the police have killed him. I thought, the police? How could the police have killed him? What are you talking about? And then she carried on explaining to me, and I could hear everyone in the background crying, and I realised that what she was saying was true. And I phoned the police station because I didn't believe her. And I asked them what had happened. I said, I'd like to know where my brother is. He said, who's your brother? I said, Jason McPherson. He said, I'm not talking to you at the moment. I said, no, you need to tell me, where's my brother? And he just slammed the phone down. And I kept calling back. And then the IPCC phoned me and said that Jason had died in custody. So I thought, I've got to get to my mum's, I've got to drive. And I got in the car and I drove to my mum's. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. And they started telling... I walked in my mum's house and my other brother was up in his bedroom crying. And his girlfriend... I got to stop. Sorry. So I got to my mum's and... my little brother, Tyrone, was in his bedroom crying. My mum was sitting on the sofa and she had all her friends around her. And I still thought, no, this isn't happening. No way, Jason can't be gone. This isn't real. And then my granddad walked in and I could see from his face, and it was just slowly, it just started dawning on me that Jason's gone. This is why everyone's acting like this, because he's not here anymore.
When Jason McPherson is pronounced dead, his body becomes the property of the state. The Independent Police Complaints Commission are called to investigate. They must secure the crime scene, interview witnesses, and collect evidence. Why did Jason die in police custody is the question they must answer.
Assuming it's an independent investigation, so death in custody, the first thing the commissioner will do is approve the terms of reference, appoint the investigating officer, and make the offer, the initial offer, to meet with the family. I normally sit down with the investigators and have a discussion around not just the, you know, the obvious things that have to be looked at, you know, the witnesses, the door-to-door, and the forensic, but also about the context in which the investigation is taking place. What are the community issues? How does this relate? How does it relate to other cases that we've dealt with? Is it in the same area, same location? Does it reveal a trend? Is there anything that we can do to mitigate the damage that the incident may have caused?
The IPCC, I firstly remember them on my case, right in the beginning, saying to me, it's okay, we're independent of the police, we've got nothing to do with them, and we're going to help you, we're here to help you. You've got a family liaison officer, you can phone her any time, and she'll be with you every step of the way. And I thought, oh, okay then.
You look at evidence and facts, and you analyse them from an independent perspective. So, and let me give you an example. The idea, for example, that somebody who's a police officer wouldn't tell a lie, so therefore you accept every first account you get from... Well, you know, we're not stupid, right? And we live in the real world. And if there had never been a corrupt police officer, never been a violent police officer, never been a racist police officer, never been an officer that unreasonably used excessive force, we wouldn't be here. There would be no IPCC. There'd be no need for it.
I went to see the CCTV camera, the footage, and the commissioner looked at me after and she said, Sam, I'm so sorry you had to see that. She said, I never thought it would be that bad. And she said, I'm going to do my best to make sure we find out and we get to the bottom of this. And I trusted her. I thought, well, if she's reacting like that, she must see these things all the time. And she's going to help me, kind of thing. There's no audio on the tape, so I don't know what they're saying, but they're talking and Jason's shaking his head and he's saying whatever, and it's just his normal self kind of thing. And then the main officer goes up to him and he kind of just holds his mouth like that and he starts pushing him down to the side. And then as he's pushing Jason over, another officer walks through the door and the second officer has just come in and he's gone underneath the first officer and you see another 12 officers running through past, and I sat there and I counted them and each one of them ran through and ran into the reception and they're all in front and they've all got a part to play. But there's some holding his legs down at the bottom, there's some on his face, there's you can see that they're still digging his face out and the elbow's still going, they're still punching and everything else. But the worst part of it is that my mum was still calling him, trying to find out where he was, and she heard him shouting down the phone. She said that she heard Jason saying, I can't breathe, get off me. And the only reason is that it stopped was this one black officer that was there that wasn't part of it all. He went up and he tapped the main officer on his back as if to say, come on now, that's enough, let go of him. And they did, and they all got up and they all left him. And there's also blood on the floor from where Jason was. And then he just fitted. Like, do you know, like when someone has a fit, he just started fitting on the chair. And then they've put him down on the floor. And then within minutes, seconds, the ambulance crew arrived. And then the ambulance crew just... You see them just putting Jason on the stretcher kind of thing and just carrying him out. The first night I went to the Notting Hill police station, one of the IPCC investigators stood there and he said that the whole incident was recorded on CCTV. He said that the system was put in with sound. He said, I can't get the sound yet. He said, but it was put in with sound and we'll be able to get it. And then a couple of months after, I asked him about the audio. Have you found it yet? He said that it was never put in with sound.
As the inquiry into the death continues, it emerges that the senior investigator in the case is an ex-police officer. It's not an isolated incident. 88% of all senior investigators in the IPCC are ex-police officers.
We have a number of retired police officers, former police officers who work for the IPCC as investigators. There are deaths in custody cases where the investigation can prove that there's no fault on the part of police officers. It's the ones where there's the suspicion that there is fault or evidence that there's some fault that are the ones that are most concerning. I find that when it comes to working with former police officers who are investigators, they are far more conscious of what I might think about it than many people give them credit for.
I failed miserably to enforce these simple procedures, and as a consequence, my uncle, David Emmanuel, also known as Smiley Culture, is dead.
The mysterious story of another death. Darkness spreads like a malaise, the fragile coil of life unwound, cold steel that penetrates a heart. Death stalkers take a grip. The edges of the picture, the corners of this room, are where the story now takes place. Each face holds pain. The anger deepens with every word and fact, with every question. The mystery of how a man is dead when police are standing by his head. The memories of hard restraint have left their marks and bred distrust. No legions of the dead, no evil souls, no whisperers will stem the cries for truth, this lust for life they feel. Heartfelt demand to know the truth fall in the air before they reach the towers of the wicked. With each release of pain, of overflowing love, of brother, father, sister, mother, the tragedy of lives turns sour by po-po, the rich, the hateful few. And yet, the tears are not in vain. They nurture seeds of hope, form in a flood that drowns those fools that play the tune of state.
To families involved in deaths in custody and bereavement and the pain and anger that causes, all I say to them is, look, you know, the only thing I can guarantee is that I will tell you the truth based on what the evidence is. That may not always be something that people want to hear or want to see, but that is the one thing I can promise. And, you know, in setting yourself up in that way, you know that we're dealing with death, bereavement, we're dealing with some of the worst things that human beings can do to each other. That's never going to be nice. And, you know, I don't expect the truth that we uncover always to be nice.
The first thing I would make sure was that the police officers did a statement, that their statements were written down. I would say that another family, I would so highly recommend that they get their own pathologist report done. They get their own toxicologist reports. They do everything themselves independently. Even though the IPCC say to you, we're independent, we'll look out for you. Don't. When Jason died, the coroner's assistant said to me that, he said, I need to tell you this. He said, you can have your own pathologist. He says, but you don't need to. It's not a murder investigation. And I sat there and I thought, oh, okay. I said, I will be having my own pathologist report done. And he looked at me and he said, well, you do realise it's got to be a certified doctor. And he was just trying to make it difficult, just so that I'd say, all right, then forget it. Just do your post-mortem kind of thing and I'll just read your results. But I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted to do everything myself so that I can make sure that everything is truthful.
Her search for truth, my search for light. Emil Nolde understood light. He painted mountains, the sea, clouds. The colours merge, the contours of reality blur. And here, at last, I see a glimpse of hope in this vision, at the edge of the picture, at the corner of my eye.
January 2010. the inquest jury gives its verdict. Jason McPherson's cause of death is cocaine intoxication. The jury are critical of the police for not following procedures. Could anything more have been done to save his life? The IPCC released their report stating that no police officers will face criminal or misconduct proceedings for their involvement in the incident. The case is closed.
I never thought I'd have to go through this. And there's not going to be no ending to it, even after the investigation and everything, you know. I'm still there. There's not going to be no ending to it till the day I die. So.
There have been 827 deaths in police custody since the IPCC was formed. They have investigated fatalities as a result of police violence, including excessive restraint, shooting, CS gas, and use of batons. No police officers have ever been successfully prosecuted for manslaughter in any of these cases.
I don't feel ashamed in saying that we should try and do better. It's not an admission that we're incompetent. Right? It's not an admission that we can't get things right. I'm saying that however well we do things, we must always strive to do better. And the very fact that there hasn't been a successful prosecution following a death in custody to this stage isn't the fault of the IPCC, but we are part of that system, and we need to make sure we play our role in making that system better.
Time passes by, the killings never end, a message to the politicians they now have come to send. The long arm of the law has crushed another life, the investigators cut the corpse up with a knife. The body parts are held in secret jars containing hearts and brains, the evidence of liars. Each year, the numbers of the dead increase, and yet they won't reach number 10. Be warned, these endless years of grief and sorrow will turn into the fires that burn tomorrow. For me, I'm done with death. I'm full of rage and fight, and all along, I've always known resistance is the light.
It's just strange, isn't it? Even sometimes I still think, you're just on autopilot all the time, and you're running around seeing your solicitors and you're seeing everything else, and you're thinking, and then you get home and you think, my God, I'm doing, and you see like Jason's picture and that, you think, I'm doing this all for him, because I know that if it was me that this had happened to, Jason would be doing it. That's why I've got to keep doing it, because I know that he'd do it for me. He wouldn't do it any other way.